Every meeting someone has to deal with specific tasks, and Rabbi Blazer really took this upon his shoulders, so thank you so much also for making this happen. We have two speakers tonight, amazing speakers that we looked into to make sure that they're exactly what we need to hear from. But first, just one very, very quick anecdote is that somebody asked Rabbi Yitzhak Berkowitz during a Q&A, the Rosh Hashiva of Eishet Torah, and he's the Rosh Kolel of the Jerusalem Kolel. If you are looking into Shidduchim and you're looking into a boy and you find out that this boy has seen a therapist, so what do you do? What do you do? Is that an issue? So Rabbi Berkowitz looked puzzled and said, I don't really understand what you're asking. Do you want the boy that hasn't seen the therapist? And I think it's very telling that there's a stigma attached to this, and that's why we're here tonight. But just as there are physical issues with health, there are mental issues with health, and we need to be able to seek the correct assistance when we need it. So tonight, first, we're going to hear from Rabbi Moshe Rotberg, who is the Rav of a major kehillah in Toms River. He's also the author of an amazing sefer, Emergencies in Halacha. And if he wasn't busy enough, he's also the Rav of the Lakewood Hatzalah, and also the founder and director of Hatzalah's Psychiatric Emergency Response Team. In addition to that, he's consulted by Gedolei Ador, Gedolim in America, for mental health issues that they're facing within their communities. So it's really an honor and a privilege to hear from Rabbi Rotberg.
Rishus Harabanan. Really, it's such an incredible thing to see. The first few times they reached out to me, whether or not I'd be willing to come, I thought if I ignored them enough, they'll just go away. And then I got a message and saying, we're confirmed. I want to talk about flights. And I said, turned to my wife, I said, it didn't work. And really, what an honor to be here. It's such a wonderful, wonderful community. Every time I come here, you're blown away where we are. We're here. It's unbelievable. In Lakewood, we think that there's outside of Lakewood, there's really nothing else. And to see this is really it's an incredible thing. And to have this host besides of those here, to have Dr. Norman Blumenthal, who is not when I talk about a pioneer, what he has done for Klal Yisrael is immeasurable. We are going to Baruch Shem Aperis L'Doyrei Doyrei for the work that you have done, the Mesiris Nefesh, the sweetness that you do it with, without the difficulty, and you're an inspiration to every single person in the field. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should pay you back kifel keflayim, you only have gezunt and nachas, and Mitzvah Hashem, we should all go out of business, but your chayin, and what you give to other people, that's something which will require soul needs forever and ever. You know, there's... any major conference you go to today, any major conference you go, I was at the Gudda convention last year, and the biggest topic everybody was talking about was mental health. So much so that the Gudda convention this year had a full day with hundreds of professionals was there and from all over the world talking about mental health. I was about a Torah Masorah convention. Mental health. You know, and it's obviously, you go to Kesher Nafshi, wherever, and this is the conversation everywhere. You know, I don't read publications for the most part, not Peshit, I just don't have time. But I want to tell you something. I can't tell you how many people I meet every single week and tell me, I just read this serial about this guy, the addiction, the this, the that. This is our fun stories, our bedtime books now, has been about mental health. What is going on? Why is this, why are we all talking about it? And you know what's interesting is that if you look back 30 years ago, in many communities, in Yiddish communities, if someone had a child with Down syndrome, they denied it. In many Hasidic communities, they would never, ever keep that child. And they would give it away, someone else. And someone else could take care of the child, not you. The stigma attached to something even like that was, how are we going to do Shidduchim? And of course, there was a tremendous stigma. And it, as well, there's for years, I just, you know, remember when I was telling a very chashur yeshiva, and the reason why I even went to social work school was I was becoming a rav in an out-of-town community. They offered to pay double the salary if I had a degree in social work. Had no intentions to use it for anything. And I'm telling this big yeshiva that what I'm planning on doing, and he says, psychology? Therapy? He says, so you want to be involved in taking away kids from their parents? This is the psychology. For so long, this is what it's been about. Now, I can't say that it's completely untrue and unfounded, some of the fears that people have around the treatment of mental health. But this is what was going on. This was the leading voices for years and years. And, we think about in our communities, the reason why it's spoken about even more is, and I think it goes, you talk about the pressures of the frum community, it's unmatched to almost any other community. Think about it this. Imagine somebody has social anxiety in any other place in the world. He becomes a gamer in his mother's basement until he's 70 years old and nobody knows. What's the difference? You know, Hashem created Fortnite literally for people like that. And they feel good. They feel that they're very successful in their lives. Take a frum kid. He has to go to shul. He goes to shul. And then there's always that annoying rav that goes over to him and says, come, and slaps him to the front and gives him glila. That person with social anxiety, he has to be exposed to that. His bar mitzvah, shteitzach. So he gets someone to sing in the first word of his pshatel, but it's a struggle. There's no room for ADHD in our school system, in our mitzvahs. We don't allow for it. We do not allow for someone with ADHD. If you had ADHD, it's not acceptable. No ADHD for you. Amazing. I remember I was in Camp Manova when I was a young. And the Camp Manova was like a modern camp. Look like the kids, the cake now. I'm like, this is actually yeshivish compared to what's out there today. They're learning groups for 2.5 hours in the morning. And if you missed it, Rabbi Geldberg, like, oh, you're docked from sports, from color, from the world. 2.5 hours of learning. And after lunch, time for learning never ends, another hour. And then at night, another 45 minutes. Laza up. We have ADHD. These kids all over the place. They come to the summit to have a good time. There's no room for this. So why are we struggling so much? Our system does not, we are built with difficulties. Now let's not even put away, we're not even going to get into the moral, the emotional, the structural corruption that's going on with the exposures and the fact that people have absolutely lost moral compasses on every single level and we've get drifted further and further away. That's a whole separate conversation. But the bottom line is, we're coming more and more aware, first of all, that the two worlds are not so opposite. This is not, it doesn't have to be a secular world. And if it is a secular world, we're doing it wrong. So I think that's something which is changing a lot. You know, in Chazal, Mishnayos talk about what's called the Ruach Ra. People that mean Mechal Shabbos. What does it mean, Ruach Ra? Does it mean that someone has is possessed by a demon? The Rambam calls it melancholy. Sounds like depression. These are not new things. The Stipling Kran de Igrisa talks about Shabbos with regards to OCD. These are not new things. These aren't things which came up now. Addictions aren't new. The Rajbaz Chuvis about people gambling. There's nothing, it is in Kol Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh for good, for bad, for everything. But in our community, there's still incredible stigma to some degree, to a large degree. And even more than that, there's a certain amount of, sometimes people say, oh, we're such a narcissistic community. No, we're just a very unforgiving community. I met a guy, Shneib, in Tom's River. And he's a doctor, successful person. I meet him one day and I said, I said, weren't you engaged like a few years ago? What's the story? When are you getting married? He says, no, we're supposed to get married, but... So you know my fiancée, she struggles with bipolar, and she had a very, very bad episode like 6 months ago. She was in a facility for like 2 months, so she was able to get out. We're going to wait till it stabilizes until we're going to do this. I don't want to put the pressure on her. Imagine in our community such a thing. It would never happen in a million years. I'm not saying you should. But therefore, we are so scared. There's so much fear around it. Sometimes they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and I want to get into a couple of the extremes we have in our community. On one hand, we have a world of hysterics. I have to tell you, the first client I ever saw was a bacher. He was 14, 15 years old. Comes into my office, and I'm terrified of him. This is my first case ever. And he turns to me and tells me that he doesn't want to go off the derech. Doesn't want to go. But he's going off the derech. But he doesn't want to. He loves Yiddishkeit. And he's confused. And he's back and forth. I was so confused about it. And I'm trying to figure out, make heads and tails, what is he talking about? So then don't go off. But I need to. But I will. So why? Because I had no idea what was going on. Remember, I went to my supervisor, I said, what is this? He says, I don't know, the guy sounds really, really... He says, you just got to keep digging. But I ended the third session. He says, I know you keep asking me. I'm going to answer you all the questions. I'm going to give you something, but you're not allowed to talk to me about it. And he takes out this crumpled piece of paper, and he puts it in my hand, and he says, I never want to see it again, and he runs out the door. I open up the paper, and it was a magazine, a front magazine. And it was a... was actually an article about trauma. She quoted the doctor. And in the article, the author writes how many people that went through molestation and trauma, how many of them go off the derech. This poor kid was convinced that he's going to go off the derech because in the article it said that as a result of trauma, you're going to go off the derech. He's just waiting for it to happen, but doesn't want it to happen. I remember chasing the kid to the parking lot. He said, we're not talking. I said, and I explained it to him. He couldn't even believe it. We have taken anything that happens. On one hand, we have people sending everyone to therapy for everything. There are rabbeim that are sending their entire class to therapy. And it's certainly a very good way of dealing with it. Especially when the kids are spending half the day in therapy. There are mothers and fathers who as soon as the kid misbehaves, that's it. We need therapy. You don't need therapy, you need parenting. Accept it, kids are okay. You know, I had it recently, this summer, mother called me up, she thinks her kid is a sociopath. I said, sociopath? How old's your kid? So she's eight, he's eight. I said, your eight-year-old's a sociopath. I said, how do you know what a sociopath is? She says, I know what it is. I said, what gave it away? She saw her kid take a frog and smash it over the head with a rock and kill it. So I told the mother, I said, and who said he's a sociopath? And she says, ChatGPT. Oh, am I a sociopath? I didn't do it to frogs. I did it to salamanders. But... I mean, this is incredible. So on one hand, we have a world which is all men, everybody's a problem. And then we have, you know, we have a whole other side of the complete denial that what's going on. Now, why is there so much denial? First of all, there are people very, very suspect of therapists and therapy. And there's some horror stories about it, and I want to tell you, I don't know the percentage-wise, but there are a lot of bad stories. There are. And I know from being in the field, sometimes I say the worst place I want to be in is in a room of therapists. I understand it. We have relief, literally for that reason. If that was an issue, you wouldn't need relief. You have Yellow Pages. I don't know if they still have them. They used to have Yellow Pages. You go to Yellow Pages, you find out. But I want to talk a little bit about this. Let me tell you the things we're downplaying. When we have somebody, a child, who doesn't listen to anybody, he does not take criticism from anybody. Nobody can tell him what to do. If you tell him anything, he blows up. And the parents will say, hey, that's a very strong personality. Guess what? When that kid gets married, there's a woman that's dealing with that strong personality. Now, is it necessarily narcissistic personality disorder? No. But there's a huge problem. And someone's going to be dealing with that. And by the way, it'll be you. Just three kids, $100,000 into the lawyers, and at some point we're going to say, what is going on over here? These are things which is a tremendous issue. I want to tell people talk about psychotic breaks, nervous breakdown. I don't know whether you know, there is no such thing as a nervous breakdown. No such thing. The stories that people said, a guy was learning and learning and learning the whole night, and then he snapped. And therefore, when people are learning so much, don't snap. Nobody snapped from learning all night, or learning 10 nights. People who had psychiatric issues, untreated, and ended up learning 10 nights because they were manic, they had a psychotic break. And that's what it is. There's no such thing. There's no such thing because somebody learned so much and they snapped. The reason why we have so many of these horrific issues is because they're not being treated. And they're not being treated quick enough. They're not being treated effectively. And we're pushing it off because people are scared. They don't want to go down that rabbit hole. They don't want to go down that road. And that's the issue. The issue is not when you have a woman who will tell me, I know I tend to be anxious. You don't tend to be anxious. You have severe OCD that your children need to get undressed by the door when they walk inside the house because they're bringing germs from outside. You're nuts. That's not a little nervous. It's not a little clean. You are creating pathology for generations to give and give. You are the retirement plan of many therapists for generations. And we have to stop just being okay with this. There's nothing okay about it. And this is when we go down what is happening. What is happening in our communities? How many suicides are there every single year? It's not to be believed. And I'll tell you, and maybe it's a little controversial to say this, many of the suicides that are going on, in my humble opinion, are really unavoidable. There's nothing we could have done about it. There are people that are in treatment, they're doing everything, and they're really, really not well. And people tried their best, and there's nothing they could have done about it. But there's way too many that we're just neglecting and neglecting and neglecting. We don't want to deal with the real issues because it hurts to deal with it. Now, the world turned into is the extremes of the world. So what's happening today is whoever has the microphone in that minute in media, in the world, in social media, is taking on a whole new life for itself. For example, when we were 2 years ago, I think it was I spoke in North Miami about a coil. Was it here? Hollywood. It was in Hollywood, right. We were talking then about psychedelics. I don't know if you remember. I said, boy, I said this is coming. You guys need to know this is going to be a wave of the future. Do you know what is going on in the world now? How many people are pushing psychedelic drugs as treatment for everything? Do you know how many divorces have happened when people saw God in the psychedelic trips? How many people envisioned that when they were 3 weeks old, they were touched inappropriately by somebody? How many people with underlying conditions became psychotic as a result of this? So in one hand, breath work. I have no idea. The world is doing breath work now. This is treating the world. Whatever the latest craze is, you have some people running towards it. And we have to start getting, as a film community, we got to start getting back to the middle of the road. And what does that mean? It means as follows. if somebody has any issue which is affecting their function, that is a problem. When you have a child that you can't control in the class, at home, for 2 seconds you can't control him. He's basically in timeout all day or in front of a big fat screen all day because you can't handle him for more than 3 minutes. And you just daven that your wife never goes away with her friends overnight because you'll kill the kid. But when the Rebbe comes and tells you he has a problem, you're like, oh, you want to just put him on meds? You just want to put him on meds? He doesn't have a problem. How many parents tell me, yeah, the Rebbe's complaining, so what are you doing about it? What do you want me to do, put him on meds? I don't know. I don't know what you, I'm not saying, I don't know your son. But you can't deal with it, what do you want from the Rebbe? We're pushing, and now when the kid all of a sudden is failing in school, killing his self-esteem, anything which is affecting the function of a person needs to be dealt with. If it's a small problem now, it'll get bigger, or it can get bigger. That's number one. And a lot of times, you know, people say all the time, like, aren't there side effects? Aren't there side effects to medication? You know, there's side effects to mental illness also. So, you know, this is a conversation. I don't hear anybody going through, is there side effects to chemotherapy? Yeah, lots. But then again, people don't take chemotherapy because a friend told them either. It's something which is a serious discussion which has to happen. It's not one of those things that I don't feel comfortable with this reality, and therefore I'm not going to, and therefore I'm going to ignore this. So one thing is as follows. Anything which is affecting the function of a person. Now what does it mean affecting the function? The house is disrupted. The person is not able to do what he needs to do. It's affecting their function. That is a very, very a telltale sign that we have a problem that has to get addressed. Now, what is the response to it? What has to get done? Every case is different. But it can't be ignored. And this is where we need to get true experts. People who are real experts in the field. And this whole new thing about, it's an amazing thing. Some people go say, though, I'll send my child to a therapist, but they don't really want to collaborate with us. They do it on their own. I don't know, if I ever went to a doctor and I said, can I get your records to show for a second opinion? And the doctor says, I don't share records with anybody. I'd be highly suspicious. Or when they don't want to work with the Rav, the Rabbein, or whoever it is. That's a serious sign that there's a problem here. But we have to recognize, if your child is struggling and he can't make it with his friends, he can't make it in his home, how's he going to make it with his spouse? And we're creating a massive problem. Depression isn't just a person, it's just, you know, yeah, he's sort of in a down mood. Is he going out to play with friends? Is she talking to friends? Is it affecting her day-to-day function? If it is, that is a serious issue. If we leave it, how many times do we sit around in a home, Rahman al-Aslan, after a tragedy, whether it's a psychotic break, whether it's Rahman al-Aslan an overdose, whether it's Rahman al-Aslan a suicide, and we sit around talking and we say like, and people are like, yeah, you know, truth is she was always very, very, she always was sad. But you know what? I didn't know so bad. I didn't know. So afterwards, what do we do? What's the point of that? How many times, I hate to say this, how many times have been by the tie room's in the back, and yet someone coming and crying and asking mechila, I should have taken it more seriously. Why? At that point, it's too late. And that's not to say that everyone with a psychiatric issue is going to chas v'shalom, something terrible is going to happen. But this is what, we don't leave anything untreated if it has to be treated, because we don't know where it goes. We don't know. And let's say it's not Rahman al-Islam, something that extreme, it just ruins their life. It just affects their marriage. It just makes them not productive. These are things which we have to understand. We can't let these things go. And you hear from people all the time. I have a friend of mine that he went on meds, and ever since then, he's nuts. He's mamish, he's crazy. Since he went on these really strong meds, and he went crazy. Yeah, so if he's on really strong meds, maybe there's some underlying issues. but we just mix all the facts together. We have one guy in shul that is the expert. He sits in the back and talks with confidence. And he says, I know for a fact. And he says, spurs whatever he wants. And you have people listening. And sometimes he's not in the back of the shul. Sometimes he's on Facebook. Sometimes he's on Instagram. Sometimes he's in one of the major publications, Jewish publications, spewing his things over there. You're playing with your lives, your children's lives, your spouse's lives. This is not where we get our information. This is not what dictates what we should do. So I want to break it down in a couple of basic things. You know, people are really, what are they afraid of? Most people are afraid, for the most part, is either the stigma or shidduchim. That's what people are afraid of. That's number one. Number two, people are afraid of, I heard once you're on medication, you can never get off. This is one of the biggest myths. And by the way, this was an internal study done, the group of mental health people. They sent out these questionnaires, and these things are coming straight from them. The number two thing was that once you get on meds, you can never get off. No, now I'm not saying if someone's taking benzodiazepines, yeah. I mean, if someone's popping 3-4 Klonopins a day, he's got a big problem. And you can end up in other places, 100%. But there's nobody, if you cannot get off a medication, that means you need to be on the medication. And if not, the alternative is not very good. There's no one that ever built up a tolerance. Now his body needs some Zoloft, some SSRI. And he gets off. He just can't get off. No, there's ways to get off. And if you can't get off, and if you're really, really not responding well, that means you really, really need it. So what we've done is we've pigeonholed people for life, that for the rest of your life you need to suffer and deny and hide instead of actually being able. How many people feel so relieved that I could actually talk about it? I had the most interesting thing I had last week, 2 weeks ago. Some Chassan Rebbe calls me up. He says, doesn't know what to do. He said, he's seeing this chassan. The chassan is taking Zoloft, small dose, taking 50 milligrams. He's in therapy a few times. He's engaged now. He's feeling bad. He really wants to tell. He wants to get it off his chest and this and that. Going on and on and on. Could he come talk to me? He comes to talk to me. And he tells me, you know what's so weird? I said, what's so weird? He said, I could have promised. I just saw my collar leaving here. I said, your collar? Why did your collar be leaving? He goes, I could almost promise that I saw him leaving. Her collar was just by with a Shiloh that she's on 50 milligrams of Zoloft. She's been in therapy since seminary. She wants to know if she has to tell her chassan. Called her Shiva in Lakewood. I said, Kodesh Baruch Hu's Mezavik Zivugim. Now, you know what the amazing part is? Sometimes the stories don't end that way. Sometimes the story ends off that someone shares something and the shidduchim break. There's a lot of times it's heartbreak. But you know what? When we tell people that you cannot be normal because our society doesn't allow for you to be normal, that is a death sentence to somebody. And most people would rather be okay than to have to hide not being okay and live with that facade their entire life. And the fact that we've made the Holy Grail about this, that this is shidduchim, no one's going to get married. It's not true. It's not fear. It's not your decision. You're not Hashem. Now, I'm not saying there are people that are disclosing things like mentioned earlier. You know, do I have to disclose that I went to therapy? No, why would you disclose that you went? Don't disclose. Why is that even a conversation? When I was in eighth grade, I couldn't concentrate. I was on ADD medications for 6 months. Then it didn't help, whatever. Then I ended up figuring it out without it. I'm not big into this whole world of disclosures. But the fact that we're telling people don't get help, or we're denying that ability, we are hurting people tremendously. The amount of tsar that people are suffering in because they can't treat it is an absolute disgrace what we're still doing to people. I want to tell you like this. There's a lot of fads out there of therapy. It's true. We have to be very wary of them. There are people, Rabbanim, selling, pushing people to go to psychedelic trips. Breath work. There are people that go to trauma therapy, and they're in trauma therapy for 10 years. I had this couple came to me a few months ago. And the wife tells me, she says, oh, I've been in therapy basically my whole life. She says, I've been trauma therapy the last 10 years. I said, 10 years in trauma therapy? I said, what's going on? My mother was very, very dismissive and always anxious. And she just described most of Klal Yisrael. I mean, it was like... So I said, 10 years in therapy? She said, yeah, sometimes I go twice a week. I said, some people don't daven with a minyan that often. I said, that's a long time. I said, where are you holding? She looks at me and says, right now, I'm about 8 years old. I said, 8 years old? She says, we started out already in utero. I was already having stressors because my mother was very apt. She was going through her own medical things. So I was already neglected from then. We're moving up. We're by 8, 9 years old. I said, you'll be dead before your bas mitzvah. And she looks at me and says, you know, I didn't think of that. We have a lot of messed up things. We really do. We have to be very careful. People talk about therapists that alienate people against their parents, turn people against their parents. It's true. It's true. That's why you need to know who you go to. These are all true things. There are people that over-medicate. It's true. Especially school systems. I want everyone to be on medication. Not all of them, not everyone. But yeah, it's out there. It's true. It's also true that there are many people, if they find out that someone went and took care of their mental health, it's going to affect their shidduchim. It's also true. But what's not true is that therefore by avoiding it, everything will be okay. We've lost way too much. Our community's lost way too much. So what should we do? Number one, this idea that we're going to decide. And I wanted to say also, people tell me lately, there's, I am very, very depressed. I'm on medication. I have a friend of mine that did it with natural herbs, with vitamins and things like that. I always tell those people, show me the person. We are so gullible because we don't want to face the reality that we're dealing with. These are hard things to face. But not facing them is our destruction. We're destroying people for nothing. Because you know what happens when we get over it? So now we know that we need to get help. We have organizations like Relief. They have thousands and thousands of resources, of data from people that went to places. We go to therapists, we collaborate with them. If they're not going to deal with us, if they're not willing to talk to a Rav, to a Rebbe, to a parent, again, sometimes it comes certain ages, there's a technical problem, especially teenagers, you get the I don't want you to talk to the parents or whatever. But we have to look into who we're going to, who we're sending to. We should not dictate before we start what we're okay with and what we're not okay with. It's the most ridiculous thing. It's literally like someone going to an oncologist and saying, look, before you do that biopsy, I'll tell you right now what I'm not okay with. Chemo's out, radiation is out. If you have one of those pill things, that immuno stuff, the genetic stuff, that I'll do. I'm telling you right now. Nobody would do that. When it comes to mental health, the same thing is true. We have to stop suffering alone. And I want to tell you, there was a time where you have organizations like HASC. You have OHO. You have in Lakewood Shy. Proud parents dropping off their children with Down syndrome, with autism. Proud of their children, smiling together in magazines. this Rav's child and that Rav's child. It was something a couple of decades ago was impossible in most of Klal Yisrael. And we figured out that it's actually just a reality. And are there people that say, well, the Down syndrome, is it genetics, is it not genetics? Yeah, of course there are. Is that a reason why we're going to take a kid and stick him in a closet? It's something that we need to face, we need to deal with. What to deal with, how to deal with it. That's, of course, a case-by-case basis. And the only thing I can tell you is, do not get your information from hype, from what people are saying in the streets. Someone else is, I want to just say how ridiculous it is what's going on with word of mouth. Somebody walked over to me a couple of months ago and says, Rabbi, I said, you got to tell you, I did this psychedelic trip. It changed my life forever. So I'm so happy for you. He says, would you try it? I said, why? He said, stuff's strong. Stuff's really strong. It really changed my life. I said, can you imagine? You know what Zyprexa is? It's an antipsychotic. So could you imagine walking over to a guy in shul and saying, hey, I have a Zyprexa, an antipsychotic. You have no idea what it did for me. Do you want to try it? Would anybody take you up on it? If you have a medication that's one size fits all, you got a big problem. Because if we handed everyone in this room a Zyprexa, maybe one or two of you will feel better, the rest will fall asleep and it'll be miserable. And this is what we're doing. Everyone's comparing notes, what worked for them. We need to stop. We have to have nothing to do. We need to find the people that we trust. And we need to, and even we don't go blindly. We want to understand it. We want to discuss with them. But we're not fighting them. Not people come in and say like, if you tell me this, I'm going to walk out. Walk out. What would you want from me? I'm not here at my health. I'm going to feel the same way whether you walk in and out. Especially if they swipe the credit card. I don't care. But you are going to be the problem. We should not be creating terms for our health. And the last thing is I want to end off with. I want to tell you, Hatzalah called me about a few months back. They're in a home, and this girl is absolutely psychotic. She is floridly psychotic. She's Mashiach. She's pregnant. She's pregnant and some famous. She's all over the place. We can't listen. We can't talk to her. I said, okay. So sounds like we need an admit to the hospital. Oh, here's the thing. The parents don't think she needs a hospital. So okay. So I said, let me speak to the father. Father tells me. I said, what's going on? Okay, listen. She always had some anxiety. She had some anxiety. And I think just lately the tests and lately this and lately that, you know, and going on and on and on and on, that it just lately just caught up with her. And then she went back from camp and this. I said, so she just had a little anxiety. That's all. Yeah. Little anxiety? I'm shocked. You sure? I said, okay, so let me explain. I said, speak to the mother. The mother is already, let's say a little bit more than a little anxiety. Hope I don't get in trouble for this. It's not being recorded, is it? I tell one of the Tzala members, I said, do me a favor, you in the room, just look, just have him look on the dresser, see if there's any pills that you see over there, just so we can get a better idea. He says, yeah, there's actually a bunch of pills in the room. I said, could you read them to me? And he says, okay, one is a generic for Zyprexa. One was Lamictal. One was Depakote, and the other one was Xanax. This girl has a severe case of bipolar. But they wanted to get her off, for Shidduchim's sake, they wanted to get her off the medication. So they took her off the medication. With, not irresponsible, there is a fellow who's very, very good with vitamins who was directing them how to do it. And after this girl had a complete psychotic break, ended up in Cornell Westchester for over 3 weeks there, potentially never ever going to fully recover from such a horrible episode. Actions have consequences. And that is horrible. Imagine if the father would have turned to this girl and said, look, you struggle with bipolar. You didn't ask for it. You weren't, this is not a punishment. We don't understand why. And guess what? There's a lot of successful, highly successful people with bipolar. It's not a death sentence. Some of the most famous people that this girl may know have bipolar. And instead of embracing it and dealing with it, we brushed it under the rug. And now this girl, her chances of getting married have just went down dramatically. We could lie to ourselves. We could look in the mirror every day and say, I do this every day. I look in the mirror, I say I'm skinny. I could do it every single day. Bottom line is, when I go to a store, I'm still going to look for the fat section because I know that the other pants won't go on. We could be in denial as much as we want. But at the end of the day, there are consequences. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help all of us. We are a community. We have so much chesed in our community. We have so much chesed. We have so much tolerance in so many ways for so many different types of problems. And it's time where we need to put an end to this whole concept of mental health being in the shadows of the norms of things that we deal with. We make so much progress. There's so much treatment. There's so much hope. Even the people with the worst personality disorders, most difficult personality disorders, there's treatment, there's hope, there are people doing well. Let's embrace it, because we broke with the schus of tzaddikim who are just looking out to help people. The schus ha-tayr, the schus ha-mitzis has the ability to do things that nothing else could do. We don't have all the answers, we barely have any answers. We have to know what our shtadlis is. And we have to know what our shtadlis is not. And again, convincing ourselves that we don't have a problem is not going to make it go away. Dealing with it responsibly, to the right people, the right way. Not just listening to the Welt, not listening to the streets, not listening to hype. In any way, doing what we need to do, the same thing we do with anything else, because Baruch Hu should protect us, Hashem should preserve us, Hashem should give us all koyach to be able to deal with the struggles that are coming up every single day in our lives, our children's lives, our parents' lives, and we should be zeicher to come out of this bitter gullus. And we should be zeichet to see the Yeshua Hashem clarify him.
Whatever introduction I give to our next speaker is not going to do him justice. Dr. Norman Blumenthal, whenever I asked other psychologists and professionals to tell me a little bit about him, the quote was always, "Are you kidding? He's a legend." So unfortunately, I'm not in the field, and I can't say I have a personal experience or knowledge, but I know that we are extremely privileged to have Dr. Blumenthal with us here this evening. I can tell you that he is the director of the Trauma Center for Ohel. He deals with thousands of cases across the United States, serious issues, and he has a wealth of knowledge. He is, as some Rabbanim are a Rav's Rav, he's a psychologist, and the questions get upgraded all the way up to Dr. Blumenthal. So it's a tremendous privilege to have him here with us this evening, and we get to hear words from Dr. Blumenthal.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. The rabbi of the shul where I grew up used to begin his sermon with, "Before I speak, I want to say something." So before I speak, I'd like to say something. First of all, you can realize how important this gathering is, that both Rabbi Rotberg and I tore ourselves away from the 14-degree weather in New York to come here and speak. I'd also like to thank the Vater Rabbanim, and particularly Yoni Schwartz, who was up 4.5 hours last night trying to find me another flight after the one that we originally scheduled was canceled. And also want to thank my hosts, the ultimate hosts, Karen and Martin Berger, who I have the great honor to call Mechutanim. And I also want to thank Rabbi Rotberg for his speech. Actually, Rabbi Rotberg, your speech reminded me of something I heard just last week when I was at a wedding in Baltimore. Over the last few years, my wife and I, for Pesach, have rented homes in various places big enough, Baruch Hashem, to host all of our children and grandchildren. And last year, we were in Tom's River. We got a very big house in Tom's River. And the shul in which I davened in, the rabbi asked me, between Mincha and Marav and Acharon Shel Pesach, if I would speak a little bit about what's going on in the community. So last week, at this wedding in Baltimore, I met someone who was in the audience from that speech. And he was talking to me about it, and he said he was sitting next to an old Polish Yid while I was speaking, and he doesn't hear so well. And at one point, he turned to me and said, what's he talking about? So I said, he's talking about mental health and psychological problems. He's a psychologist. He goes, I knew it wasn't Torah. So they said, how did you know? He said, everybody was listening. So, Rabbi, you spoke about mental health and Torah, and everybody was listening. And one more point by way of introduction. Throughout my career, I've always had my practice in my house. I had a lot of benefits. Cut down on my commute. In fact, sometimes when we'd have a snowstorm, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's this very cold white stuff that falls from the heavens and makes it very hard to travel. And patients would call to cancel. I told them, I had no problem getting here, you know. But there was one distinct disadvantage. I would sit with parents and tell them how to be firm and in control. Meanwhile, upstairs, bodies are flying and there's cursing and screaming. I told my kids, you're discrediting me. But my point is that whatever I say to you now, I'm saying to myself as well. It's two ways. Rav Samson Frohl Hirsch says that why did Hashem make the miracle of the luchos, that they were seen all the way through? Because if they were blank on one side, and only seen on one side, it would be like he was saying, this is for you, not for me. And I'm saying the same thing. This is for me as well as for all of you. Three other stories that I think explain why we're having this gathering tonight. Also at this wedding last Thursday in Baltimore, someone who had attended one of our bereavement retreats in Oval. We have a number of retreats. We do a retreat for parents who lost children. We do retreats for parents who lost children to suicide and overdose. We're basically in the film community. We have a sibling loss retreat. But he happened to be at one of the parents that lost children retreat. So he came over and he was talking to me. And he started telling me about his nephew. His nephew had a very difficult time. Didn't fit into yeshiva, wasn't doing well, a lot of difficulties, and was really starting to get it together. He was starting to attend shiur, we found the yeshiva where he fit in. Then a horrible trauma happened to him. I don't even want to say what, because he might figure out who he is. And since that trauma, he hasn't been able to leave his room. He doesn't go to yeshiva. He's upstairs in his room all day. And in the course of describing to me the challenges that this nephew is having, he said, and the yeshiva told him to leave. And I stopped him right there. So let me ask you a question. If he had cancer, would the yeshiva ask him to leave? If he was in a very bad ski accident and was badly injured, would the yeshiva ask him to leave? Why are they asking him to leave? And he even surprised me. I said, he's not learning. And the guy with cancer is learning. And the guy who's injured is learning. That's why we're having this gathering. I teach in the Smicha program at YU. And one of the courses I teach is a course in bereavement. And what I do is I alternate weeks. I lecture 1 week, and then I invite someone who had different people who had different kind of losses to come and present to the guys so they get a first-hand account. My last class, I've traditionally brought in a couple that lost a 19-year-old to suicide. And the father said something once that sent shivers down my spine. He said, if my son had cancer, I could have talked about it. And I could have known whether I have the best oncologist or I'm giving him the best treatment. But because my son had depression with suicidal ideation, I couldn't talk about it. Maybe I didn't have the best therapist. Maybe I wasn't giving him the right medication. And if my son had cancer, I could have told everybody and people could be davening for him. They could do a mishaber for a chola. But because my son had depression with suicidal ideation, I couldn't do it, and nobody was davening for my son. That's why we're here tonight. And another class that I teach to the Smicha students, I co-teach, Rabbi Rothwax from Teaneck, and this class called Contemporary Issues, we try to focus on members of a shul that might feel marginalized, might feel not they're part of the community. You know, gayrim we do, people with kids off the derech, older singles, people struggling with fertility issues. This past year, we added another subject, people with psychiatric disorders. And we had two guests. One was a member of a firm community who himself has been in and out of psychiatric hospitals struggling with a mental illness. And the other one was a couple, very vibrant, healthy, wholesome couple, smart, fathers of a very successful professional, who have three children with significant psychiatric disorders. And the mother mentioned to the guys that at one point, when her son was 16, she had to admit him to a psychiatric hospital. The same week, another 16-year-old from the shul went into Sloan Kettering. The kid who went to Sloan Kettering, the family got meal trains. It was announced in the shul, there were Tehillim gatherings for him, and for her son, nothing. That's why we're here tonight. So let me state what should be the obvious, and Rabbi Rotberg mentioned it as well, and I think it's important. People from very cohesive, wholesome homes, replete with shalom bayis, true ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, have children with psychiatric disorders. Individuals themselves, who are resilient, creative, trying very hard to learn, to keep mitzvahs, struggle with mental illness. As little as we can judge those who have other ailments, who have other mishaps, or other misfortune, we can't judge those who have a psychiatric illness, or their parents. And, you know, we don't cast judgment on parents whose child may be medically ill, or whose child may have had some, as I said, some kind of mishap, some kind of misfortune, and we shouldn't do the same for parents who have children with mental illness. To some extent, we have become parent abusers. We owe that to our forefather, Freud, because he pointed, he attributed much of the problems to parents. But we know so much, as we again was mentioned previously, there's so many other influences. Someone once mentioned, said, that the ability of the parent to be a protector, to be the moat for their children, began to deteriorate with Alexander Graham Bell. Because now somebody can get into your home and bypass the parents. Al-achas kama v'kama, with the technology we have today, what kind of influences there are. There are genetic factors. There's a social group. There's all sorts of factors that go into what shape us and whether it's strengths or whether it's ailments. And we have to understand that it's not just parents and we can't be look judgmentally at others as well. And another important point, again, I feel like I'm repeating a lot, but it was said previously, but I'll say it in my own words. Therapy is not a religion. Sometimes we'll recommend therapy, and someone will say, I don't believe in therapy. Do you believe in dentistry? Do you believe in podiatry? Well, since when has psychotherapy been a religion? And as the relief can attest to, people who go into this field are trained, are licensed. They go on and on. I don't think any other professional goes for so much continuous training as mental health professionals do. And by the way, you go to someone who's licensed and someone's trained. Unfortunately, we have situations where people are sort of hanging shingles and claiming to be therapists when they're not. But therapy is empirically based. It's based on research. It's based on studies. It's not some hocus pocus. It's not witchcraft. Now, it is very collaborative. There's a difference, let's say, between surgery and psychotherapy. A surgery, you put the person to sleep, and you cut out the tumor or whatever. Therapy is collaborative. Therapy is a give and take. And sometimes even the relationship between the patient and the therapist is important. One of the things I tell my patients is, if I say something to you, I want you to take it seriously. I want you to consider it. But if you do, and it doesn't resonate, it doesn't make sense to you, then I'm wrong. I'm not a mind reader. This is a collaborative effort, but it's still a treatment. It's a bona fide treatment. Also, what we consider a cure in mental health is very different than in medicine. If you have a strep throat, you go to the doctor, you get an antibiotic, and you anticipate that the strep throat will go away. If you have a fracture, you put a cast on, you allow the bone to mend together, and you're cured. Now, putting aside, let's say, the severe disorders like schizophrenia or bipolar, most of the conditions that we're working with in more moderate forms and with some mastery can actually be an asset. In a few months, we're all going to be filing taxes. You better hope that your accountant has some OCD, because they'll be very precise and they'll be very exact. Now, not such OCD that they can't leave their house. Not so much OCD that they can't function because they're busy obsessing whether they left the door open or something like that. But if they have that tendency and they have mastery over it, that helps. I once had a POSIC tell me, a known POSIC tell me. He knows he's OCD, and that's why, but he's channeled it to being very precise in rendering halachic decisions. The studies on test anxiety show that the best level is a medium level of anxiety. To have too little anxiety, you're not motivated. If you have too much anxiety, then you're dysfunctional. But you have to have a medium level of anxiety. Many, most ambitious, very successful people have a ton of anxiety, but they channel it, they master it. In fact, we had a very interesting experience in the OL trauma team a number of years ago when the government started giving shuls and schools money for added security. And part of the money went to having, I'm sure they've done it down here as well, intruder drills, unfortunately, unfortunate side of the time. A school shooter or something like that. What to do. And of course, the security firm gave the ideas of how to go into a corner and lock the door, pull down the shade, that kind of stuff. We had nothing to do with that. But they asked us to come in because they're afraid of the kids being traumatized, to identify the kids who may have been traumatized to help those kids. And we fully anticipated that the anxious kids and the kids who may have had trauma in their lifetime would have an adverse effect. But we came across another group that we hadn't anticipated, that we had to address. And those were the kids who had too little anxiety. Usually the dysregulated children who were making a joke out of it, who were making believe that they were shooters. And they weren't hearing the messages that, God forbid, if it's needed, they wouldn't know what to do. So we were in the awkward position of trying to calm down the anxious kids and trying to make the kids who weren't anxious enough more anxious. But anxiety has its place. Or for that matter, ADHD, which was alluded to before. Research shows that kids with ADHD or adults with ADHD are more creative, more venturesome than others. They're very often the people who make a lot of money if they survive school. Yeah, they don't take well to sitting behind a desk and having some adult lecture them about something they're about as interested in as I am with the Mideastern history of Mongolia. But when you let them loose, they're entrepreneurs, and they can be very successful. So all of these, what we call conditions, have their place. The Israeli army has a unit. It's called Roe Merechok, seeing from afar. It's a unit, entire unit of people with autism. And it's not just the chesed. People with autism have a hyperacuity. They see things very precisely. And they'll see an aerial view. And they will see the terrorist hiding behind the rock and nobody else will. That's why it's called Roe Merechok. So they use them. They're constructive. They're an asset to the Israeli army because of their autism. When I was in Israel about a year ago, trying to see how we can assist with some of the trauma from the war. And we'd be taken around by different trauma experts in Israel. And I was in Sderot, and I met a woman who is in supportive housing. She's a cognitively challenged woman, a woman of low IQ. And she grew up in Kibbutz Be'eri. She lives in Sderot in a supportive apartment or housing. And her parents still in Be'eri. Her father was murdered on October 7th. Her mother, at first they thought she was taken hostage. When we got there, they knew already that she didn't live, that she didn't survive, but they were keeping her body in Gaza. Baruch Hashem, she's back like all the others. And she told us, and this is again a woman who knows very little, as I said, limited cognitive abilities. But she told us that one of the residents in her supportive housing told her that she should take a shoebox and every day collect a rock. And then until her mother comes back, and then when her mother comes back, you can put the rocks on the kever. What a beautiful thought. What a therapeutic action for this woman. And I didn't think about it. I'm the trauma specialist. I didn't think about it. her fellow resident in this housing thought about it. So we can see, again, instead of looking at this as people who are dysfunctional, these are people who have certain distinctions. I mean, I even say mental health professionals. I believe that most mental health professionals have an undercurrent of depression. I feel it's true for me as well. But it helps us connect to human suffering. Let me talk about two very difficult topics. Briefly, I'm not doing them justice, but I'm going to allude to the issue that was raised before of suicide and shidduchim. Somehow they're connected. When we talk about suicide, yes, there is a dramatic rise of suicide in our community. Just now, an hour or so before I came here, I got a call from one of the insulated Hasidic communities in New York where there was a suicide just today. Now, we presented, my colleague Anait Zvi Reiter, who co-leads the trauma team, we presented at the Aguda Mental Health event and at Nefesh for hours on it. There's a lot of new, interesting work going on in suicide. And I for the mental health professionals, please, we're changing our whole perspective how we're treating suicide today. But for your point, I just want to mention two things. First of all, again, people from very secure, safe, wholesome homes of children who have suicidal ideation. And they themselves are remarkable people. Imagine trying to deal with all the stresses we have in our lives and at the same time have this internal battle whether you want to live or die. Sometimes as one of the people I work with said, sometimes it's heroic to live. But one of the things that we know is that at least for older adolescents and for adults, asking them if they're suicidal does not increase suicidal tendencies. If you are with someone and they're in a bad shape, you can ask them. You're not, oh, gee, I never thought of that. That's not going to happen. And number two, the reason given most commonly why people don't share suicidal ideation is they're afraid of the reaction of the person who's hearing it. And if you panic and you quickly dial 911, or if your therapist says, oh, no, I don't treat that, they're not going to want to share it. So if you do hear, don't panic. Sit down. That's serious. Let's talk. Let's figure out what we can do. And we can help. It is help. We can help people with suicidal ideation. In fact, one of the questions we've been getting, a high school girl is completing high school, wants to go to seminary. She has a history of suicide attempts years ago and ongoing suicidal ideation. Can she go to seminary? And we say yes. We have safety plans. We have programs that can protect her. Why can't she do what everybody else does? I've told some of my patients, you can lift 120 with suicidal ideation. We'll help you with that. But again, this is all part of undoing the stigma. And shidduchim. I often say I didn't learn enough mental illness to understand the shidduch process. But let me ask you a question. Who do you want raising your grandchildren? You want someone who had this charmed life, never had a problem, never had a challenge, lived with tons of money, went to the best seminaries, BJJ, JBB, IDT, was all the best seminaries. Married the second guy she dated and got the down payment for a house in a fancy neighborhood for her wedding. Is she prepared to face any kind of crisis, or he? How do we know what life dishes out? In comparison to someone who may have had some challenges, who may have faced some difficulties, heroically faced them, dealt with them, who's better equipped to raise your grandchildren? I remember I just got a call a short while ago, someone I had helped years ago. And I said, my son was suggested someone, but she's taking anti-anxiety medication. I said, great. I'd rather her than someone who should be on medication, but they're not putting her on medication so she can get a shidduch. It's great. Grab her. And I want to tell you one more thing. I tell those people all the time. If you're in the shidduch scene, and someone tells you about a young woman who's never had a problem, never had any challenges, is 100% healthy and coping, run for the hills because they're liars. Because there's only one woman like that and she's married to me already. So it's not, they don't exist. So how do we reduce stigma? So let me give a few suggestions. First, let's be careful about our jokes. I want to experience, I mentioned this at the Nefesh conference, I think even at the Gooder one, I'll mention it again. I'm at the stage of life that I'm getting regularly invited for sitter parties, Chumash parties, Haschalos Gemara parties, Gemiras Gemara parties, whatever. You know, they usually, I don't know how it is down here, but in New York, they pick the most traveled days of the year. You know, Mother's Day, Thanksgiving, and they have one of these events so we can spend most of the day on the George Washington Bridge. But, you know, today, so we were at a Chumash party for our grandson, and the Rebbe, you know, today you can't just be a Rebbe, you have to be an entertainer. And the Rebbe is a very funny guy, and grandson loves him. And he was speaking to the boys, and he started off by telling a joke about a bunch of people jumping off a bridge. And I looked around the room, there were about 200-300 people there. I'm saying to myself, does he know that there's nobody here that has struggling with suicidal ideation? Does he know for a fact that there's nobody here who lost a loved one, a child, a parent, a sibling, to suicide? Would he make cancer jokes? Would he make COVID jokes? Would he make fatal car accident jokes? It's not funny. So I wanted to say something to him. My wife has these things called social skills. I'm not too sure what they are. I know I should probably have them. And she said, you know, if we want Yechiel Yaakov to pass third grade, maybe you should keep your opinion to yourself. But I think we have to be careful about that. These are real crises. We have to identify and help those members of our society who are ostracized. I remember a number of years ago, we had a program for Ohel about divorce. And we made a video. And in the video, a divorcee was saying, since she's divorced, she gets no invitations for meals for Shabbos. And the Rav who was speaking was actually Rabbi Eisenman from Passaic, said, it's very nice that we have friends over for Shabbos, but that's not Hachnasas Orchem. That's a Ravis. It's very nice. Hachnasas Orchem is inviting the person over who needs the invitation. It should be the divorcee. It should be the person who's living alone because they haven't found their shidduch yet. It should be the widow or the widower. Those are the people who need the invitations. We have in our block, Baruch Hashem, we have an oil home in our block of adult women, and my wife and I, we invite them over at least once a month. They're so excited. They're going to the Bloomingdale's, they say. I don't know what they're buying there, but those are the people that we have to help. We need that sensitivity. And again, I said, I'm talking to myself. I want to tell you a huge mistake I made. I'm changing the facts a bit, but a huge mistake I made a week ago. I teach this bereavement course to all your smicha guys. And it's actually a partnership between Reitz and Firkef. Reitz is the smicha program, Firkef is the graduate school in psych. So it's a real course. They got a certificate in pastoral counseling, a state certified certificate. So they can't cut corners. So when I have to miss a class, if I'm going away or something, so I have some people who cover for me. I'll try to get somebody else to come in. So I called a colleague and a friend of mine to cover a class that I have to miss in a few weeks. And the topic unscheduled for that class is early widowhood. And I give him the material and ask him to teach it. So I send him an email asking if he would teach this class in early widowhood. And it was a few days, I didn't hear from him, I was surprised. And he wrote back, he said, I'm not sure I can teach that class. And then it dawned on me. He has a child, an adult child, young married, who has a very terrible illness, and the outcome of which is very uncertain. How could I have been so insensitive? Why didn't I think about that before I just quickly asked? That's what we have to do. We have to think twice. We have to think about those who are more vulnerable. And now I want to say something I'm probably going to get into. I love saying something I'm going to get in trouble for. This way I don't get invited back. But I want to say something that might be a little controversial. We have a custom in our community. Families who are marrying off their last child, we dance the mezinkin. And believe me, someone who has the zchus of marrying off with their children, they're doing something right. It's a wonderful zchus, and Hashem is smiling upon them. It's a wonderful thing to celebrate. And they get the brooms, and they pull them up with flowers, and put flowers on the parents. First of all, I don't like the symbolism of brooms. We sweep away dirt. I think a rocket launcher might make more sense. But okay, I think the caterer might have some problems with that. But you know what? I was recently at a wedding where I knew a lot of the people there. And they were dancing the mezinkin. And in 15 seconds, I identified 6 people for whom this is painful. People who have older children who aren't married. People who have children with disabilities. People who have fertility issues. In fact, one such person, I mean, I was talking to my wife about it on the way home. She said, yeah, she was standing next to him. She said, nobody's going to dance that for me. Do we have to do something that hurts other people? Celebrate for sure. And after the last Sheva Brachas, get together with the family, take every broom out of the house. It'll be the cleanest house, right? Do before Pesach, you know? And dance your heart. But does it have to, do we really have to do this? We know there's a Shidduch crisis. We know there are people for whom this is painful. Those are the kind of things that we have to think about. One more point, and then I'll conclude. There's a lot of talk nowadays. I know that Ephraim Goldberg, up in Boca, somewhere around here, you know, talks a lot about mental health hygiene. I think it's a wonderful idea. We do have a mental health crisis in our community. And it's very good that we have the professionals that we do. That we have someone like Roy Rotberg, who's a rav and a professional, and that's going to help a lot. But there's that ounce of prevention. Just like there's dental hygiene, we should have mental health hygiene. And I think in today's world, we have to focus a lot on coping. We have to give over to our children skills and abilities to cope. And the rabbi has to incorporate that in his sermon. When I spoke at Torah Masorah this past year, that my message was the same to the teacher. We have to cull lessons from our Torah, from Torah, on how to cope and manage, because we do have a mental health crisis. And I'd like to give an example from this week's Parsha, the Mishus of the Rabbanim. I was speaking at a Simcha for some very close friends a number of years ago who were going through a very hard time. Something happened to them, and it was really a very painful time, but at the same time, they were making a Simcha. And it was Shabbos B'Shalach. And I asked a question that others have asked. It says, you know, the Jews are leaving Mitzrayim, and instead of taking the direct route to Israel, they're going a detour. And not only a detour for which they're going to be trapped. They're walking towards water. And in the middle of that, the Torah says that Moshe took the atzmos of Yosef, took the bones of Yosef. What's it doing over there? Moshe took it when they left Mitzrayim. It should have been earlier when they left. Then Moshe took the atzmos. So some people say, well, it was the schus of Yosef that was Kriyas Yamsuf. Then put it by Kriyas Yamsuf. Why there? And I said that Yosef, they were going on a detour that made no sense. Yosef's whole life were detours. He was the favorite son. Next thing you know, he's in a pit and he's sold as a slave. He works his way up the corporate ladder in Asia's Potiphar's life, and then through some slander and lies, he's back in the dungeon. He ingratiates himself to the Sar HaMashkim, hoping that he'll intervene, and he forgets about him. And ultimately, though, he rises out of it, and he saves the Jewish people. So it's like Moshe says, you think we're going on a detour? Look at Yosef. Look at Yosef's life. Sometimes what we think is a detour, sometimes when life doesn't work out the way we want, it's the HOV lane to the Yeshua. Those are kind of messages we have to incorporate in our Shabbat, Friday night table, in our drushes, so we have the coping skills. In fact, there's some interesting research out of Emory University, which is also somewhere around here, I don't know. But that's in Atlanta, I think. But they found that people who know about their ancestry, and by the way, only 3 out of 4 Americans can name all their grandparents. Think about that for a second. But people who know about their ancestry and know about their nation's history have better resilience than those who don't. And that's so much a part of our lives. So let's put that into our world and let's make it part of our lives. Let me conclude with a story that I think speaks to what we're talking about. Rav Yechiel Pir, Zichrono Livracha, just passed away about a year or two ago. It was a Rosh Yeshiva in my neighborhood, Derech Eson, and Yeshiva Far Rockaway. Told this following story. A number of years ago, he had someone in his yeshiva, sort of filler yeshiva, who had a serious psychiatric disorder, probably was schizophrenic, not clear. But he did strange things. He did things that were some unpredictable, but they managed him. They had him part of the yeshiva. He was incorporated. They kept him sort of in line and gave him a sense of belonging and purpose. One night after night seder, he comes all excited to Rabbi Pear, and he tells him they had a dream the night before, and the Baal Shem Tov and Rav Moshe Feinstein were coming to him, and Rav Moshe Feinstein cursed him out. But my parents started getting nervous because he knows this guy. He knows what this guy is going to do. So he said, so what did you do? He said, so I went to the yeshiva. I went to the Lower East Side. Rav Moshe was alive at the time to confront Rav Moshe. And he was blotzing. He was a gadol hador, answering questions from all over the world, managing a yeshiva, have to prepare shir, and this unstable guy is coming with his dreams. So he said, what happened? I said, Rav Moshe, listen to me. He asked me for mechila, for cursing him out. And then he told me I must be very special that I dreamt about the Baal Shem Tov, because he himself never dreamt about the Baal Shem Tov. That's someone who doesn't have stigma, and we should, God willing, be able to at least somewhat approximate his level of Avas Yisrael and concern for others. Thank you for listening. I hope it's been helpful.
There'll be a Maariv here in a few minutes. So there'll be a Maariv in a few minutes.